Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And in this week's Screen Verdict podcast, we're going to be reviewing a show you're probably hot off the heels of watching the finale of, if you're 4 or 5 weeks behind like us. It's HBO's The Newsroom.
Yes. Now, to be fair to us, it's a bit out of date. It's a bit behind the times doing a Newsroom Season 2
that
podcast.
That doesn't seem like it being fair to us. That just sounds like more criticism.
Let me finish. There's been a lot on TV, to be fair to us. Like, we had...
Don't criticise us. Criticise the Newsroom, because it didn't achieve the buzz level of Breaking Bad. It's the show's shortcomings, not ours.
Yeah, pretty much. So, but we finally got here, and it's a show we quite like.
Yeah, we did a podcast on Newsroom Season 1. Despite the fact that it was an Aaron Sorkin show, I actually liked it slightly more than you did. I think I gave it a 9 and you gave it an 8. So we both liked it. Had to do a review for Season 2.
Very much so. We love our Aaron Sorkin. We love our, well, I love my Aaron Sorkin, and we quite enjoyed The Newsroom. I guess you really enjoyed it if you gave it a 9. I can't remember you gave that high a score. So The Newsroom, for those who don't know, it's a show about a newsroom. People talk, people go out with each other, they report the news. Is that probably enough of a background before we go into our spoiler section?
Yeah. It's Sorkin's idealistic take on how the news could be reported on television.
Boy, a lot of relationship dramas for an idealistic take. I think the idealistic newsroom would not have, like, love triangles and quadrangles and, yeah.
Maybe Sorkin's just into the drama. That's how he rolls in his personal life.
Yeah, very much so. So, just a spoiler alert, if you haven't seen The Newsroom Season 2 yet, or you don't know who wins the Obama-Romney election from last year... Tune out now, watch your tapes, watch the DVDs, download it all, and then you can listen to the podcast later. So,
spoiler alert.
Okay.
Newsroom and general news spoilers coming at you.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, the first thing I noticed about Season 2 of The Newsroom was they changed the intro.
Yeah, do you like the change of intro to The Newsroom?
Nah, it's just shots of random stuff. I don't care about random stuff. I want to see the characters, and I want to see the actor's name pop up next to the character. So I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Sloane, played by Olivia Munn. I like her. She's always doing goofy things, even though she's really sexy. Like, I don't want to just see random shots of coffee mugs, keyboards. That's not exciting.
Now, I think Season 1, the intro, was a little long. I think it dragged on a little bit. It was something HBO shows tend to do. I think they've got to be 55 minutes or something. They need to pad them with something. And this season, it didn't seem like it got much shorter, but it did seem it got a lot more generic. So I agree with you. It was pretty dud. Like, just shots of, bridges and coffee mugs and... all sorts of things. I quite like, though, I feel like it's also pretty generic, just the picture of the actor with the name next to it. I agree, a better generic. I quite liked in Season 1 how in the promos they had some clips of, like, famous news people. I quite like that. So I thought maybe what would have been good is just keep the clips of the famous news people, maybe add in an Edward R. Murrow. I think he was a notorious snub from last year's opening credits. I think that's maybe the way you go. A bit like our Homeland theme has a whole bunch of, like, famous people who have, like, had a bit of a dubious relationship with Homeland Security over the years, namely the US presidents.
I thought this new opening credits was kind of like the Office opening credits, just shots of office appliances, but without the character standing next to them. Instead of Pam next to the copier machine, it's just a copier. Like, what's the point of that without Pam?
Yeah, I agree. It's like, yeah, they did just cut out all the bits of the characters from the Office theme, make it black and white, so a little arty, and then just make it 20 times longer.
So as well as changing the opening credits, they also adopted a little bit of a new structure to the show this season.
Fill me in.
Previously, they might play with sort of flash forwards or flashbacks within an episode, but this time we got a flash forward to pretty much the end of the season. We learned that there was basically a court case, or at least lawyers were being involved, because something had gone wrong in the reporting of something I believe called Project or Mission or whatever it was, Genoa.
Oh, my.
And now we mentioned on our season one podcast that we weren't going to watch any news, listen to any news, or read any newspapers, any radio, any TV. So we didn't want to have news spoiled. All right, when we watched the newsroom, we wanted to find out the news when we watched the newsroom. Now, I've done a fairly good job of that. Not because I'm ignorant and I don't want to stay up to with current events. I just was saving it for the newsroom. But I made a few slip-ups here and there. I occasionally catch things on TV. But I hadn't heard of Genoa. I thought, oh, that's good. I haven't actually heard of Genoa. That doesn't sound familiar. I'm glad that I avoided that one. I'm going to be able to enjoy it while watching the newsroom.
Yeah, I agree. And I was really excited because, like, the more this season went on with the Genoa thing, it sounded like it was going to be a pretty big story. It sounded like it could have ended Obama's presidency, and I thought, this is getting pretty dramatic. This is getting very... They talk about all the heads that are going to roll. Like, oh, I'm glad I didn't watch the news, because this is going to be very good. So we're very intrigued by Genoa, for sure. But even more exciting than the Genoa mission was the Romney bus. Jim went on the Romney bus.
Which apparently causes a whole bunch of trouble, as we get told repeatedly by the show. If this guy hadn't broken his ankle and Jim hadn't decided to go to there and this person hadn't done this and this person hadn't been replaced by this guy, then the whole Genoa story never would have happened.
Yes. So it sort of is Jim's fault. Because last season he professed his love for Maggie. He got embarrassed. She decided to go out with the other guy. Yeah, it didn't end well. Okay, so when you're heartbroken, which I'm sure you and me have both been from time to time. I'm sure.
Not every day, but on just like a bi-weekly basis, you know, something like that.
I mean, I'm sure there has been a time where maybe you and me have been heartbroken. We can dig through our lives. I think there's probably not, we didn't have this opportunity, but there's nothing better to do than get on a Republican campaign bus. Nothing's going to make you feel better. I'm not making any comments about the Republican Party there. Obviously, we're a non-political podcast.
Well, someone that does make a comment about the Republican Party is the show The Newsroom. Now, I didn't know too much about Romney. I knew sort of a little bit. But the newsroom was quite informative when it came to Romney. It turns out he's just a complete douchebag. He's just an idiot, entirely unfit for any sort of office.
Yes. Now, far be it from me to defend Romney. However, Jim seems surprisingly surprised that a politician isn't answering questions. With the Romney bus, Jim doesn't quite fit in with the other reporters. He doesn't really know what he's doing. He thinks he's a bit above it too. Were we enjoying this?
It was a little bit silly because I think the Romney people were overly not likable. And then Jim is kind of funny with his smart-ass probing questions and things. But then it gets to the point where everyone's like, okay, yeah, we get it. We're not impressed. You're not achieving anything. And then Jim actually turns out to be the butthole of the situation, making it tougher for all the other people just trying to do their jobs around him.
Yeah. There's a scene, like, because he's on his own over there, so he's got to even set up his own camera and stuff at reporting sites. And here's something I found a little interesting. He's setting up his camera to film himself, and he gets the hot girl reporter to fix it for him. And she, as a joke, does it like not facing him. And you go, "It's not on my face now, is it?" And she's like, "Never trust the competition." Anyway, and then there's a montage of him doing heaps of these, sort of filming himself. Why didn't I saw the? I had a bit of an inspection of the camera. I know my way around a video camera. You know, me and you, used to do screen production at uni together, and this was one of those cameras where you can flip out the screen and turn it around. So I don't know why he didn't just do that.
I don't know. Maybe because that would have killed the joke, Matt. Maybe that's why he didn't think to turn it around.
Now, I feel like we're spending a lot of time talking about the Romney bus, which is probably the least interesting storyline of the season. Any other Romney bus comments? We have missed a few things.
I mean, we'll talk about relationships later, but he meets the girl and she's fine. She's kind of attractive and does a couple of jokes, but we're not really that invested in her as a character, really, so I didn't mind if that worked out for Jim, to be honest.
Seems pretty fair. Now, we've talked about Jim. There's a girl he likes, or liked, probably still likes. That's why he needs to get away from her. Maggie. Jim leaves to be away from her, and she decides to make this completely redundant by getting away herself.
Well, she feels like she needs to have a specialty. You know, this is the economics guy. This is the military guy. She says, "I want to be the Africa girl. Whenever there's a story on Africa, I want to be qualified to be your go-to source." And I guess in order to be the Africa person, you need to visit Africa for a little bit, get some kids on the head, and then suddenly you're an expert on all news stories coming out of the 200 different countries in Africa.
Okay, here's the tip, and I think this is where she went wrong. You get everyone a souvenir from Africa, right? you get everyone like some stupid wooden giraffe, and you bring it back for everyone when you get back. And everyone's like, "Oh, that's great." Yeah, and then they have it on their desk. They always remember, "Oh, yeah, Africa person. I know she's the Africa person. She got me the elephant. She got me the elephant statue. I know she's the Africa person. Call her for this story."
Yeah. Or just a different exotic disease for each of them.
Oh, I remember that time when she got back from Africa and we all got sick. Yeah. You need...
Like, she can't just come back wearing, you know, some sort of tribal headdress to ACN News every day.
I think that'll work. What bar have you got to clear? Like, if no one else has been to Africa, they go, "Oh, we've got this African news story." Well, at least she's been. She's always wearing that African thing. She must know something about the place.
"Oh, we've got breaking news coming out of Sudan. Who should we talk to?" And someone's like, "Well, obviously her, the one wearing the headdress."
And I'm sure, do you want to be the Africa person? Like, how often do we see news stories from Africa?
I don't know. I think I remember someone saying something like that Africa was going to be important. Like, Africa was going to be the new something. When people say that, is it really ever the case, though? What's an example?
When Lost finished and they got all those, they started all these new J.J. Abrams mythological sci-fi series, and they all were, "This is the new Lost." And they even, like, cast someone in them from Lost just so he'd think that it would be like Lost.
Was that a quote from the show? "Africa is the new Lost."
It's the new Lost. Well, we do an Africa storyline. People will be talking about us like Lost. People are concerned Africa's too dangerous for Maggie. Is this generally something that happens in newsrooms? People suggest a story, like in Africa, and people go, "Oh, no, 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 we like you. We don't want you to go to Africa."
I think it's just building the dramatic tension that something might go wrong in Africa.
Yeah, is that, Phil, we report the news unless it's too dangerous. Unless something could go wrong, then we're out.
Did anything interesting happen on the trip? Were these interesting scenes that we got to watch in Africa?
Well, at first it's just regular. She's in a school. She's reading a kid a book. The army are being a bit sort of like not taking them to anything too interesting to do a news story on. And then they sort of... Why do they surprise them with a surprise? We're not taking you home today. Was that was that because they were trying to cover up? Like they didn't really want. They wanted them at this small school for as long as possible, or was it just the army are a bit douchey with like sort of not filling people in on the schedules?
It was that dang kid's fault for asking her to read the story 200 times.
Yes.
If you'd only read it 100 times, they would have made it back home in time.
Hmm. So anyway...
The soldiers didn't think to come in an hour earlier and say, oh, we got to leave now or else we won't make it. They just left it. They were like, oh, no. If you wanted to get home, you should have left an hour ago.
So, anyway, something does go wrong on the Africa trip, though. That was foreshadowing when everyone was worried about her not going. It wasn't a huge shock because the flash forward at the beginning of the season said that something bad happened to her.
There's a raid by a militant sort of gang and they're trying to rescue everyone and she goes back for the kid that she was reading the book to and as she's carrying him out, I don't know, does she stop to help the other news guy, the black guy? I can't remember. He falls down. There's a lot going on.
He drops the camera. And he drops the camera. She turns around to have a look.
A shot goes off, or maybe several shots go off, and she would have been hit, probably would have died, but because the child was on her back, the child gets hit by the bullet, and she has to watch him die, which I thought was pretty efficient use of the kid, sort of a backpack, a little turtle shell shield. I think that was smart. Yeah. But I'm not sure that was really the reaction newsroom was going for. It seemed like Maggie was quite sad. She wasn't impressed with her MacGyver-like skills by using the child as a shield. Well,
I think this is the kind of thing where even if you did plan it, you still got to act sad afterwards, right? Even if you intentionally use the kid as a shield, you've got to act like it was a mistake, right? You can't just go, great news, I use this kid as a shield. People are going to think you're pretty douchey killing a kid to save your life.
Yeah, they didn't establish the kid as like the Toby from The Office or Jerry from Parks and Recreation. He wasn't really that disposable, the kid.
He wasn't like the Joffrey kid from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Maggie sort of, wasn't seen
she
as
could
a
have
hero.
Done that with Joffrey. Yeah, Joffrey, you would be walking into work going, hey guys, guess what I did?
So Maggie takes it quite hard, and I guess
she does.
A memory she has is that the child was sort of enamored with her blonde hair. And I think the guy said something like that the blonde hair means trouble or something where they were from. I don't know. There was some sort of foreshadowing there. Anyway, she feels guilty for being there, associates her hair with that, so she decides to cut it off. Now, Matt, you've been critical of some haircuts in the past on some various television shows. What's your verdict on Maggie's new haircut in the newsroom?
Well, I don't like it. And you're right, I am a bit critical of haircuts. You know, someone was complaining about Miley Cyrus the other day, and I said, you know what, like, whatever the deal is with Miley Cyrus, I think she should be getting more flack for her haircut than anything else. I think it's a disastrous haircut. I think this is what the controversy should be over. Not the twerking, not the outfits. The music videos are pretty awful, but I think the haircuts is really where people should be landing on with their Miley Cyrus criticisms.
So from a role model point of view, is that your biggest concern? Like if you had a daughter who was 13 or 14 and you walked in on her and she suddenly looked like Miley Cyrus and she was doing something sex. She was having sex while she's underage. You'd be like, what is going on here? This is outrageous. And she's like, oh, no, we weren't actually doing it. We were just, like, cuddling with... It's like, no, I'm not talking about that. Your hair. What is with that? That is an offensive haircut. Get it out of my house.
Thinking about it, to be honest, I probably would be more concerned about the sex in that scenario. It was my own daughter. but everyone else, it would be the haircut. Because, well, I guess, like, when it's your daughter, you've got to deal with all these issues and stuff like that to a degree. I feel like these sorts of issues for other people, I don't have to deal with, but I do have to look at their haircuts.
Well, we have to look at Maggie's haircut in the show. And I'll agree, I'm not really a fan.
It's meant to represent a breakdown, so I don't mind that. I get what they're saying with that. Now, if you think Maggie had a bit of a drama, I've got it down here as the Genoa shenanigans, and that was really the big drama of the season.
So I guess the first part is the intrigue of confirming this story. We have this story that American, U.S., I believe it was Marines, used chemical weapons, sarin gas, on civilians in order to extract some of their people, get their people back before they were to be sold and beheaded. They used sarin gas in order to do that, which is a bit of a no-no. I think that's a little bit illegal. And at first, they're like, oh, this couldn't possibly be true. But the guy that replaced Jim, Jerry Dan Tanner, something like that, is determined to prove that it's real. He just has this feeling, he just knows, and we get more and more confirmation, and it looks like it's real. At what point, Matt, did you realize that Genoa was a fictional operation invented by the newsroom, unlike the previous news stories which the newsroom used, which were real-life stories?
Well, I knew that going in, because I know I've been trying to avoid the news, but I knew that going in, I'm not going to be that satisfied with this storyline. Because I think, firstly, either it's not true, and then it's a bit like, oh, we wasted all this time for a non-true news story. And secondly, I think this is pretty key, if it is true, if this did actually happen, and I've just been very good at avoiding news spoilers for the past year, I don't think anything that big comes of it. Like, I feel like they're talking about, oh, man, we're going to bring down the administration. Our heads are going to roll over this. And I was going, yeah, I think it would have hurt if the administration was brought down by some massive international scandal. So I'm going, this does get reported, it was a news story, but no one cared about it. So I guess it's better. I guess it was the better scenario because it appears like America didn't really use sarin gas and the American public was just apathetic to that.
Well, I guess how it plays out is that they're able to get quite a lot of evidence, not all the evidence they need, but Jerry fakes an interview. He edits an interview with the general or whoever he was able to speak to, and they go, well, that's the final piece. They air it. They go live in front of, 6 million people or something, and say that the U.S. committed some kind of military international war crime, and it instantly unfolds. The general's livid, I never said that, and it all comes crashing down. So I guess the interest in that at that point is how are they going to deal with this, and B, how did they get so much information on something that was wrong? Like, what made them sure? How did they get that much if this never even happened in the first place?
It's a very good point. Well, what did they actually have, though? And this is where the is it the black team?
The red team is the team that comes in second.
Yeah, the red team. Really, what did they have, the red team, really? Because they had two guys who were part of the mission or something, But one of them, they told all the information to before asking him the questions. So they asked him, like, leading questions. One guy was an edited interview, so he didn't actually say that that was happening. One of them was just Charlie knew a guy in the military that was screwing him around because he fired his son. Like, they didn't really have a whole lot to work with it.
Well, they had quite a lot. They had two people that said they were actually there at the thing. They had two guys from the military. I don't think they really led him on. Like, Will said that Mac didn't lead him on. They had the other guy, and he turned out to be crazy or whatever. They had the general. They had the guy's tweets that matched the description. And they had the weapons list. So, I don't know, that sounds like a lot to me.
Yeah, I guess it is easier in hindsight to say that, like, what were they doing?
I guess the big reveal is that Charlie's contact screwed him over. Did he put all of this together? Because you'd have thought, okay, yeah, he gives him this fake munitions list or whatever it was. That's not enough. You know, you're not going to get the general and these two other people there and the tweets and stuff. He's not. They still had that. Did he set it all up? Like, did he know the general? It's like, oh, general, we're going to screw over Charlie and ACN here. Like, how did it all come together? Because it wasn't just that one piece of paper.
Or did he just see an opportunity to screw Charlie and strike? Like, I guess they're the two options, I guess. Like, he goes, oh, man, they're chasing this dud story. I'm going to add fuel to the fire. That's a good question.
Either way, I feel like these are questions the newsroom should have answered.
Yeah. I also think the question, like, what's the deal with when they get to the red team and they explain everything? Like, they do a little PowerPoint. Hey, we've got this news story that's going to bring down the administration. And then Will goes, yeah, I knew about this. And then, like, what are you talking about? He goes, oh, yeah, a guy, I have a contact too, and he just told me everything. Did Will have a guy? Or was he just wanting to sound like he knew about it the whole time? Because I know I've got friends who, like, you'll tell them something, like, oh, I've got the hot goss, got the hot, not that I go around saying that, but, like, you say, like, oh, did you hear what happened? Oh, man, it's incredible. They go, oh, yeah, I knew that. I knew that, or, yeah, someone else told me. Oh, yeah, who told you? Oh, I can't tell you that.
It's like that great bit, I think it was on Jimmy Kimmel, where you know how hipsters always need to be onto the coolest, latest, newest thing? They go to a music festival and ask these hipsters whether they're looking forward to these new and upcoming bands, and they go, oh, yeah, yeah, no. Oh, I don't have the album, but, yeah, they're really good. Or, oh, yeah, yeah, I've got the singles or whatever. They're awesome, awesome live. I've seen them a few times. And they were all just fake bands. They just made them up to see whether the hipsters were prepared to know them. Is that what Will's doing? Like, he needs to have all the cool international military war crime stories. Oh, yeah, yeah, I heard about Genoa.
Yeah, yeah. I was all over Genoa. I knew about it before you guys were talking about it.
Well, the lawyer did ask, was Charlie's guy the same as Will's guy? And then they never addressed that. So I don't know if
that was
Will
shocking.
Had a guy.
That was shocking. They never, yeah.
Yet another question the newsroom didn't answer. I don't know. All I know is that if Aaron Sorkin had been on this red team, things would not have gone any better. He's leaving a lot of stones unturned.
I quite like the red team. I thought that was a cool episode where we got the red team debating whether to do it or not. That was pretty cool.
It built up the tension really well.
Yeah.
And then it's like there's this sun and everyone just kind of looks over to Will and Will has the final decision and it's kind of this really good moment. And then I was expecting Will to say something kind of snappy or cool or inspiring, but I don't even remember what it was. It was just kind of like, okay. I mean,
yeah.
So okay, I guess we're doing the story.
Yeah. Do you like it when it goes pear-shaped and they say to the whole crew, like, we've got to all stand by the story? Like, and you're feeling a little bit like at this point, it's all like the people who are against it can't really say no. Like, the captain steered a ship into the Titanic and then goes, okay, no one else is getting off this ship, okay? We are in this together.
Yeah, I thought at that point, like, you clearly needed to be abandoning ship.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone jump. So this is a disaster for the news organisation. There is nothing worse for a news organisation than reporting a wrong story. Very much so a story of this importance and that would have, if true, been this damaging to the government.
Yeah, everyone's heads are being called for. They've lost credibility. Ratings are going down. And I guess the only way to solve that is to report an election really, really well. If you do a good job on election night, which is pretty much just reading out numbers and statistics, then everyone will be like, hey, they may have screwed up that whole accusing the US of war crimes, but by God, they can read some good numbers.
Yeah, I was really thinking that the whole Genoa thing happening right before the two-parter season finale meant that they've sort of set themselves up for a great comeback story, haven't they? Like, they've sort of, oh, man, their back's against the wall. They couldn't be in a worse position. But, and maybe this is their problem with having to report the real news, because there isn't really some great news thing that happened at this point that they could have broken the story of. I feel like it was a bit of a weak ending with the just, let's do an election show, and it didn't really, you would think, get any goodwill back for the station, because they pretty much did what everyone else did. They did what, and we'd been spoilt with who had won the election, because we had to break the election last year.
I think we were the first. We were months and months ahead of ACN.
Yeah, yes. We beat Will McAvoy by a bit. I don't think they did any better job than our breaking of the news. They had slightly better production values. They had more expensive cameras. But I think we did just as good a job as them. We had an election danger zone.
And unlike the ACN news team, we know how to use our cameras, even if theirs are better. At least we know we can turn ours around.
We had it swiveled, the cameras. So, yeah, it was a very good news show. We broke the news ourselves. So I felt like it was a bit deja vu just watching them read out the results we read out a year ago.
Basically, you're saying the newsroom is a poor man's version of Screen Verdict.
Yeah, probably. I would say that's not fair. There's also relationships on the newsroom. Do we want to quickly run through these? This is my least favourite part of the show.
Well, I think they dealt with the relationships a little bit better in Season 2 than Season 1. There was less time spent on them, I think. Jim and Maggie aren't together anymore. Jim has a new girlfriend. Good for him. Maggie, she has a meltdown in front of the Sex and the City tour bus last season. That ends up going on YouTube. And Don finds it, and he finds out that she liked Jim. So Don and Maggie break up, which I was fine with because I wasn't really rooting for Don and Maggie. And then that actually allows Don and Sloan to potentially get together. And for whatever reason, I actually like them a lot more. I used to dislike Don, but I actually like him when he's around Sloan. So that was something to actually root for on the show.
I just prefer Sloan when she's not with Don and dealing with relationship drama.
What do you prefer Sloane doing? She doesn't have any other scenes.
Well, she does her quirky stuff around the office and reporting the news and things. That's what I want to see her doing.
But she does quirky things to impress Don, which she doesn't really need to because she's so awesome in the first place.
Yeah. I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Like, I don't hate the relationship. Why is Don hanging around the Newsnight team so much? Like, I didn't get that at all. Like, why he's still... He's working on a different show, and he's just there all the time.
And then I guess your main relationship is Will and Mac, which I think they also spent less time on. It's sort of like just kind of like percolating kind of under the surface. And
I don't think they mentioned it at all, really, till the season final. They didn't deal with it at all till the season final.
And I guess how that's playing out is that Mac thinks that Will is still punishing her for what she did. And he's like, oh, I was just supposed to get over it. Like, what's the timeline? She's like, 16 months. It's been, I thought that was funny that she just had such an odd time frame of which she was supposed, he was supposed to forgive her for sleeping with her ex-boyfriend.
Well, you know what they say, Jonathan. It should take four times the length of the affair. That's the rule. That's the...
If your partner cheats on you, they sleep with someone else, but it only lasted 7 minutes. 28 minutes later, you're supposed to be over it.
I think count that as a day. I think it's a one-day affair. Like, if you sleep with someone else, I think, like, that's one day you've cheated on them.
So your anger, your resentment towards your partner should last no longer than a long weekend.
Yes.
By about Tuesday, you should all will be forgiven.
Yeah, I think Matt's right on the money with this.
So Will is having to consider what mistakes Matt made in the Genoa shenanigans, and he says, apart from what she did wrong, she did everything right. And that sets him off. He realizes, she did that, but other than that, she is the best person I've ever known, best girlfriend, best person I ever want to be with, because other than that, everything is perfect. And then he finally decides to not only forgive her, but get that ring that he had in his desk that he, I guess, initially got just to mess with Mac, but he kept just in case he ever needed it. And he proposes to Mac in the season finale.
Yes, the ring of deceit, now the ring of engagements. What do you think about this?
Even though I thought it would be hard to get over Mac doing what she did, and the time frame of real life is not the same as me watching the show, but the time I've spent watching the show, I have gotten to the point where I want Will to get over it and them to get together. Mm-hmm. So it was good in the sense that it released that ongoing tension in the series. In terms of the scene, I thought it was quite good, but I thought he was going to have a bigger and grander speech. I was expecting a scene that was going to knock you off your feet like the opening minutes of the pilot, and I thought we were going to get one of the great TV proposals, but instead it was just pretty good.
You haven't been the greatest partner in the world, but you can be. Okay. Here's my view on the Will Mac engagement. I feel like they made a big mistake in season one by having given her a 4 month long affair. I just think that was a very hard to redeem weakness in their relationship. Like we talked about this last podcast. I was a bit like, it's a 4 month long affair. I can get why he's finding it hard to get over it. So I find it just a little hard to be completely on board with, especially when I feel like Mac has a bit too much the attitude of he should get over this rather than I feel like she doesn't get the weight of what she did to Will. And I feel like that makes it hard to get it. Like, Jimmy, I understand why you might never get over this. I think it would make it easier for me as a viewer to get over it than this sort of, you should have gotten over this in 16 months. Like, I feel like, you know, she'd had a bit more, look, I realize this is a horrible thing I have done and you may never be able to trust me again because of it. I'm so sorry. Makes me want to forgive her more than the, this should have taken you 16 months to get over. Or, this should have taken you 16 months to get over, Will. But Will is happy with her, which is good. I think she probably won't do the same thing again. unless they're really wanting us to hate her character. She's not going to do the same thing again. Will's happier when he's with her. And they were always going to go here in this show anyway. I'm sort of glad they ripped the Band-Aid off and did it in, I think, a fairly good way. I think it was a fairly good scene. So I'm not in love with it, not something I'm passionate about, but I don't really mind it.
So that was pretty much a wrap on the season. Is it time to head to our screen verdict?
For sure. I think this was a pretty good season. Like, a sort of like very watchable. I was sort of enjoying it. There's some good stuff in there. I like how some of the relationship stuff became a bit more beneath the surface rather than major plot points. You know, in some ways, maybe a bit more consistent quality than last season, which was a bit more hit and miss. However, here's the issue. I found some of the storylines were a little bit like, I think the whole Africa thing was a bit over the top, not in a good way. And I just feel like this season maybe was less hit and miss, but the hits weren't as big. Like, I remember season one, you know, when they reported that BP oil spill, I was so excited watching how they reported that news. You know, Will gave his big America speech at the beginning of the series too, which was great. When the Gabby Gifford shot happened and they decided to hold back that she'd died news, you were on the edge of your seat going, yeah, don't report this, don't report this. When they did it the right way, you're like, yeah, they just reported the news, man. Like, there were just some exciting moments and some great moments. Like the episode where Will goes and sees his therapist, there were just so many great lines and moments there. And I feel like looking back on this season, yeah, it was good, but I don't remember really any standout moments or so. Not as hit and miss, but the hits weren't home runs this season. I just don't. The red team stuff where the tension built was sort of the closest you got to that. But a quick shout out, something I did appreciate, and I'm sure you did too, Jonathan. In the first episode of the season, yes, we have Will. Yes, you know where I'm going?
Yeah.
Will, probably the biggest home run of the season. Will McAvoy sings Rebecca Black's Friday while waiting for the camera to come back. Stroke of genius. I did not know Aaron Sorkin was a fan of Rebecca Black like we are, especially the Friday song. But that was great. Is that where you thought it was going?
Yeah. And I thought it was good that it wasn't, like, done as a big joke, like someone tries to impress the other characters, or it's just sort of he's off screen and he's just humming to himself, partying, partying, yeah. Which I found that very funny.
7 a.m. waking up in the morning. I think he started with the beginning of this. He knows the verses as well as the chorus. Well, my boy, I feel like I know. Aaron Sorkin does not use pop cultural references in his shows because he doesn't want the shows to date. You go back, look at The West Wing, there aren't really any pop cultural references. And, like, you know, Bartlett will reference James Bond or something like that. So, like, something that you know is not going to date the show.
What you're saying is that Rebecca Black is a classic akin to James Bond.
Well, she clearly is, but more what I was saying was he's done it in a way that won't date the show. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 for the Newsroom season 2.
Season 1 of the Newsroom I gave a 9 out of 10, a really good score. And despite that score, I actually had a fair amount of complaints about it. It was just that the highs were so high that it brought it up to a 9. And some of the complaints that I had was that it could be a little bit cheesy at times. As you said, a bit hit and miss. It was a bit inconsistent. And some of the relationship was a bit drawn out and frustrating. I think they cut out quite a bit of the cheese this season. And I think, as you said, it was more consistent. And I think the relationship was handled a little bit better and was more satisfying this season. So that's a recipe for a 10 out of 10 season. But unfortunately, I agree with you again. The highs just weren't as high. There weren't those good individual episode moments of them reporting a story or wrapping something up. It was all tied to this Genoa thing, which was good, but there wasn't really the payoff that you were hoping for. And I think it just wasn't quite as funny. There weren't really jokes that fell flat, but there wasn't anything that really made me laugh out loud. There wasn't anything particularly hilarious this season. But it was still a good show. The Newsroom has, I think, two pretty good qualities in it. One is that it makes you feel good. There's just like a positive vibe from the show. I think it's part of that idealism. But even though sort of bad things happen and they deal with depressing and harsh things, it's not really like a gritty show. There's always an optimistic view or ending to those kind of things. And it gives you that warm feeling quite often. And it also just has an ability to make you want to watch the next episode. Like, even if halfway through an episode, I was thinking, yeah, this is okay. It's nothing amazing. At the end of the episode, I always wanted to watch the next one. And so it's a really good intangible quality that the newsroom has. So even though I was a little bit disappointed as well, I'm going to give the newsroom season 2 an 8 out of 10.
Oh, again, 1 point higher than me. You still enjoyed it more than me. Okay, well, let's quickly quickly pop over to a housekeeping segment. People love the housekeeping segment. Jonathan, we've opened it up. I've heard you've had a bit of an encounter with someone this week in America.
Yes, as the Screen Verdict listeners know, I'm currently in Los Angeles and been doing some Brazilian jiu-jitsu training while I'm here. And while actually at the gym, so I heard someone talking. They were talking about a jiu-jitsu fighter, and they said, oh, he came on my podcast, and we talked about this. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You have a podcast. And I think I asked him if he was campaigning for the podcast awards, which perhaps tipped into the fact that I had a podcast, and he asked about it. And I told him about Spring Verdict. And he said, oh, cool. Do you have a business card? And I was like, damn, I always knew he should have had Spring Verdict business cards. So perhaps in between now and the next couple of podcasts, we can try and rustle that up. Because people are asking for them. People want the Screen Verdict business cards.
No, maybe get a Kickstarter for them.
So as people know, I do jiu-jitsu. If you're one of my jiu-jitsu friends that listen to the podcast, or if you're just a fan of the sport or mixed martial arts, you should check out the podcast Verbal Tap. The guy I spoke to at the gym, name was Raph. He was very funny in person. And I think you'll enjoy his podcast as well. So just a bit of a shout-out to them.
Great.
Yep.
And also, jiu-jitsu and American-related, Jonathan, I hear you won something over there. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, I went to a competition on the weekend, and I had 3 matches, and I was able to win all of those by submission, and luckily was able to take home the first-place medal, so...
Can't get much better than first place medal. Congratulations, Jonathan. You're now an international award winner. award though in America.
Just one of many awards that we can place on the Screen Verdict mantle back at Podcast HQ.
Okay. Now, I've got an apology about this because you've mentioned the podcast awards, right?
Yes.
You mentioned the podcast awards already in this podcast. Voting is open now. Probably by the time this podcast is posted, though, it won't be. it closes in a couple of hours. And I, you know, I do work for goldderby.com, the leading awards website, yada, yada, yada. And I guess I was in charge of running our awards campaign, you know, like, you know, all these movies that run for Oscars spend millions of dollars running for a campaign. We had a smaller budget, but I sort of know the ins and outs of running an awards campaign. So I was sort of appointed our awards campaigner, and made a bit of a mistake with the date. I thought it closed the end of October. It actually closes October 15. So I'd sort of planned on starting the campaign at about October 15, sort of mid-October. So it's been a bit of a panic running this campaign. So we've posted something on the Facebook page. I posted something in the Gold Derby forums. I had a really exciting idea of doing a podcast specifically to campaign for the awards with all sorts of awards bait, like celebrity guests and maybe relationship dramas or something just to like get people excited, following all the rules from a from Oscar-winning
the podcast movies. In 3D.
Yeah, in 3D, everything. So, we're not going to, yeah.
Essentially, if you're listening to the podcast and you'd like us to do well at the podcast awards, please go back in time
yes, and vote please. For us
when we were eligible for Matt so, that made this blunderous campaign error.
Yeah, I just realized I haven't voted yet either. I need to do that now, don't I? Oh, what a disaster. Oh, boy. If we get nominated, though, I've got a great campaign lined up. for us to win.
Well, it is the year of the outsider, because as we saw at this year's Emmys, there was a whole multitude of upsets, and we've been putting it off to do our Emmys recap into a more relevant podcast. And what could be more relevant than the newsroom, where the newsroom's Jeff Daniels shocked everyone with the Best Actor in a Drama Series Emmy.
Yeah, I think this was a good win. He submitted the pilot episode. I was pretty pumped to see Jeff Daniels win it. I think a good upset. You would have been pretty pleased too.
Yeah, I like the show. I like Jeff Daniels. That's a great speech. It's a great tape to submit. And it's been a while now, but I'm just going to claim it. I think I predicted Jeff Daniels.
Oh, we'll have to go back. We'll have to go back to the archives. But look, Jonathan, you weren't too in love with the Emmy nominations when they came out. You said you were only interested in two shows, Boardwalk Empire and Arrested Development. They didn't really do too well in nominations. I think they got two nominations between them for the main night of the Emmys. Post-Emmys, I think you would have been pretty pleased with the winners, though. Across the board, I think people you can really get behind.
Yeah, very interesting night at the Emmys. Tony Hale won Best Supporting Actor for
me. Love it.
In
so
brackets,
exciting.
Also Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Perhaps some love for him by the voters there. Yeah, super happy. I think I said he was my favorite on the podcast, and Tom was like, he's in last place.
He was in my second place, Tony Hale. There you go.
So it shows Tom O'Neill knows nothing. I'm just going to pick all my favorites when predicting next year's Emmys.
Yeah, Julia Louis-Dreyfus won again. It was a big night for Veep, a near Veep sweep, but it couldn't win comedy series. Breaking Bad did very well. It won Best Drama Series, finally. The Colbert Report won Best Variety Series, finally. Claire Danes.
I mentioned Boardwalk. Bobby Cannavale won Supporting Actor. That was a big shock as well.
Yeah, they did as well as they could have done on Emmy night, Jonathan. So plenty of Veeps, plenty of Boardwalks, Breaking Bads. I think a pretty good Emmy night. A little disappointing Jim Parsons and Modern Family won again.
In a way, at that point in the evening, the big names winning was almost as shocking. After so many shocks, you expected another shock, and then Modern Family comes through and Jim Parsons win. You're like, oh, I'm shocked by that. It was just crazy.
Crazy Emmys, where I think they got a lot of stuff right, though. So very good Emmys. I just had one quick birthday story also for housekeeping, a bit of a packed housekeeping. We'll keep it brief. But, I spoke last week about how I had my birthday, right? And we had a fun birthday. We went, played Frisbee. I saw a movie with the A-team. You got bumped because you weren't here. I'll post on the screen verdict wall. We got a group photo of all of us at Gravity. Post a photo of the movie A-Team on our screen verdict page, and maybe our listeners can decide when Jonathan comes back who he should bump from the A-Team, who should go to the reserve bench. Or maybe should he just stay on the reserve bench? Maybe it's a good enough team. Maybe let the listeners decide. But you know what? Last week I did birthday 2.0. Do we think, is this something that is okay to do? I did a second birthday thing the next weekend because some people couldn't make the movie. So I'm like, don't worry, we'll go out the next weekend for my birthday. So we went out again and...
Were any of the same people there? Because if you've got two completely different sets of friends, I think that's okay. But if you've just tried to double up within the same friendship group, I think that's a little bit of birthday selfishness.
Some people were invited to both. And I think Jess Jones, friend of the podcast, came to both with their fiance Chris. But I think that's your only overlap.
We'll have to get Jess Jones's verdicts on Matt's birthday 2.0. So what happened at 2.0, Matt?
Well, the second one, I went to a secret bar. Have you ever been to a secret bar before, Jonathan?
No, or else it wouldn't be a secret.
Well, it's not really a secret. They've been on a slide on it. It's pretty easy to find online. And at a certain time, he just gets a massive queue outside the front, which sort of also gives away the secret to the bar.
And everyone in there is just the people running are confused, like, how do people find the place? There's no sign. It's like, oh, yeah. You got great reviews on Yelp.
Yeah. Everyone's talking about it. No, it's just a bar that it's called Secret because it doesn't have a name on it. It looks like a hot dog shop, and you go into the hot dog shop, and then you go through the Coke machine, and you end up in this bar. And they have fancy cocktails and gourmet hot dogs. It's a bit of an Americana theme. So that was pretty fun. And we got a good turnout, so just shout out to the thanks to everyone for coming to the birthday. All my friends from uni and church and things. It was great to see you all. Oh, this is also funny. On the way home, we had an impulsive stop off at Blues Point, right, to have a look at the Harbour Bridge. We love the Harbour Bridge at Screamfest. Or just any.
Speak for yourself. I hate the bridge.
What? What? And three of the other people at the party had decided to stop over there too. So I was like, hey, Matt, are they
birthday
your
3.0?
Yeah, but, yes. It wasn't really that interesting probably, but just get the verdict on whether it was okay to have a birthday 2.0.
No.
No! That's the verdict. Okay. Fair enough, Jonathan. I'll invite you to one of my two birthday things next year. You were invited. You were invited to one of them this year, I'm sure.
You should have postponed it 3 months.
Well, maybe we'll do a thing for my birthday when you get back.
Poor boy, it's getting out of hand.
I think this is the move for people. You say, are you coming to my party this Saturday? They're like, oh, no, sorry, I'm busy. You go, oh, well, we'll do something for my birthday sometime later in the week. You have all these, you've organized all these birthday catch-ups with people. Just anyone who couldn't make the party has organized another birthday thing.
Well, we'll be organizing another catch-up next week. I think probably to be reviewing Captain Phillips. I think that's on the
schedule.
Ahoy
there. Yes.
That should be pretty exciting. We're looking forward to that. Hope you are too.
Yep.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye, guys.